This episode contains adult themes and is not appropriate for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, the world. This is They Will Kill, a true crime podcast. And I'm Sadie Eck.
And I'm Courtney Eck.
And it's Courtney's night.
Yeah. I'm really excited about this one, too.
Yeah?
Yeah. It has a hero.
Oh.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm always like, oh, I wish these stories were happier. I mean, this story is devastatingly fucking awful because it's about femicide in Mexico.
Oh, no.
But there's a hero.
Yes.
So this is the story of femicide in Mexico and Frida Guerrera.
Tell me everything.
I will. So before I start, I need to give credit to an article in The Guardian titled Hunting the Men Who Kill Women, Mexico's Femicide Detective by Megan Beatley, which I relied heavily on for this episode. I also want to clarify that femicide is defined as a sex-based hate crime, broadly defined as the intentional killing of women or girls because they are female.
Yuck.
Yeah, yes. Very, like, yeah. Extremely yuck. Yeah. Fucking awful. On October 24th, 2019, 24-year-old mother of one, Jessica Jaramillo, wasn't at her spot the family picked her up at every day after psychology classes at a local university. A few minutes later, she called her mother to report that she was going out and then hung up almost immediately. Mm. A couple of seconds later, she texted, quote, "Don't worry, I'm with Oscar." Oscar was the father of Jesse's infant son, and the two hadn't been on speaking terms, so her family found it odd that they would be going out together. Their concerns grew when Jesse hadn't returned by the morning, and all of their calls went straight to voicemail, as she wasn't someone to stay away or ignore her family all night, quote, "Between school, church groups, and her baby, she didn't have the time." Thinking quickly, her brother used his computer to track her phone, and the location registered around 9 miles from her school, so her parents, brother, and his fiancé set off to find her. They asked a few people in the neighborhood where her phone pinged if they'd seen her, and were soon directed to the home of a young man that the neighbors thought was suspicious. Quote, "The man always wore a black shirt tucked into black cargo pants with calf-high black combat boots. He was muscular, about 6 feet tall, and had a military-style buzz cut." This wasn't the first time a young woman had entered the house and not come out again.
Oh, no.
Thank you, but I will be moving out of this neighborhood if fucking creeper military buzz cut dude has ladies going in and not coming out.
Well, and talk about, like, dressing more obviously killer style. Like,
that's a good point.
God, I hate it.
You know, might as well just dress like a clown.
Right, yes. Like, just wear your, like, plastic suit or whatever. I don't, you know, like,
yes.
Dexter style.
Total plastic suit. Yeah, fucking hate fuck it. That. 6 months earlier, Jesse had transferred universities after a fellow student started stalking her after she turned down his advances. His name was also Oscar.
Oh, no.
Oscar Garcia, to be exact, and he matched the description the neighbor gave the family of the man who lived in the home. There was no answer when they knocked on the door, and with their panic growing by the second, they split up and half the family watched the home as the other half rushed off to file a missing persons report.
Kudos to that family, man. They are detectives.
Yeah.
Ping the phone.
Get there.
Question
stake
the
out the house.
Yes. Man.
Well, and unfortunately, as you'll learn, the police in Mexico don't do very much, if anything. So I think that people are a little bit better prepared to have to do that, which is fucking bullshit. Mm-hmm. Jesse's family begged officials to launch an investigation considering her history with the stalker, the reports of the strange man from the neighbors, and Jesse's consummate good behavior, and it took several hours for authorities to agree. They originally asked the family to wait 72 hours before filing the report. Yeah. To start, police simply went to Garcia's home, knocked on the door, and left when there was no response.
Damn it. You gotta try harder.
Knock, knock, knock. Yeah. Sorry. It's the best we can do. That is it. The family staked out the house all night long, and the following morning there was finally a sign of Garcia when he emerged from the front door. The family confronted him. He denied having seen Jesse recently, refused to let them into his home, and he called the police on them. Officers came to take a statement, but again left without entering the house or bringing Garcia in for questioning on suspicion of kidnapping. Like, I would just go in the house. Yeah. I would just go in there. Don't think that anything could stop me from going in the house.
No.
And the fact that the police have come and gone twice without doing anything is fucking maddening.
Yeah.
He did agree to go into the station to make a statement, but not until 2 days later on Monday, as he had too much homework to do in the meantime.
Oh, God. Very studious of him.
God. Just really got to cram on the books over here. Cramming right on them. A judge denied a search warrant of his home on Sunday.
He denied it?
Oh, yeah. Nope, not getting in there. Okay. No, those cops went over and knocked twice. And
that's good enough.
Yep.
Jesus, Lord.
Job complete. True to his word, Garcia went to the station on Monday the 28th to make a statement and claimed that he and Jesse had been, quote, friends with benefits for a couple of months, and that on the day she'd gone missing, they'd had a pizza at his place, and then she'd left to go visit her baby's father, the other Oscar.
Oh my God. So he's admitting that she was
Oh yeah, she was here. She was definitely here, but she left after pizza party.
Oh my God.
After the police questioned him, he went home, stayed in his house for 20 minutes, and then came back out. Jesse's family filmed him and, quote, you can see him stride by, clad in his black military-style uniform, like an overgrown action figure, a backpack slung over his shoulder, a phone clutched to his ear. With his free hand, he flashes them a peace sign before disappearing out of the camera's frame. According to police, at this point, he skipped town.
Of course he did.
Mm-hmm.
Peace sign, motherfucker.
Fuck you. Oh, I would go in there, roundhouse kick his legs right out from under him.
Totally. Chop him right in the throat.
Totally chop him in the throat. Break that peace sign off. On Tuesday the 29th, authorities were able to review nearby CCTV footage, which showed Jesse entering Garcia's home 5 days earlier and never coming out again. The judge finally issued a warrant to search his home, and that night, police found Jesse's body inside, strangled to death, and left in a bathtub.
I know.
Jesse's family was absolutely devastated and felt utterly abandoned. And then 5 days later, a woman named Frida Guerrera knocked on their front door and claimed she could help them catch their daughter's killer.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah.
God, I'm doing this job, man.
How many times have I said, if I had nothing left to lose, I would just go vigilante? And I could not believe when I found this story. It's like, this is the woman.
Yeah.
I mean,
I couldn't kill the people, but I could totally bounty hunt them.
Yes.
Dead or alive.
Yeah.
Probably mostly live, because I can't kill people, but...
But I might roundhouse kick their legs out from under them, so they might have a lot of road rash on their face.
Yes.
50-year-old Frida Guerrera is a journalist who has dedicated every minute of her life to hunting the men who kill women and girls and finding justice for their victims and victims' families.
God, I've got so many chills.
It's Can you
so
believe
badass.
It?
No.
I know. At the time of Jesse's disappearance, she lived just a few blocks from where her body was found and describes hearing of Jesse's case as fate. Quote, I've always believed the girls tell me where to go.
Oh.
Call it magic.
Oh, so many chills.
So many fucking chills.
Wow.
Mexico has more than 73,000 missing persons who are known as, quote, the disappeared, and their faces are plastered all over billboards and social media with hashtag we're looking for you and hashtag Amber Alert being the top trending on Twitter in the country in 2019.
Oh my God.
The top.
That's upsetting.
Trending. Beyond that, Mexico has an increasing femicide epidemic, building year after year, and the UN has labeled Latin America as the, quote, most lethal place for women outside war zones.
Wow.
Brazil leads Latin American countries in femicide numbers, and Mexico is close behind. Sofria has dedicated her life to finding and memorializing the victims of femicide in her country, and every day she spends hours searching media outlets for cases of murdered women and catalogs all of them in a spreadsheet where she logs their names, ages, location, and method of murder.
Wow.
She also keeps a blog where she highlights some victims and the interviews with their parents. Quote, she's one of a kind, says Jan Albert Hootson, the Mexico representative for the Committee to Protect Journalists. She has been constantly shedding light on specific cases of women who have fallen victim to violence, which is something that very few people in Mexico have actually done. She has tons of Twitter and Facebook followers who track the countless cases of murdered women she posts on a steady stream on social media, and she claims that she's helped track down 40 killers of women since 2017.
Wow, from 2017?
Yes.
What? Like, I actually just got tongue-tied. Like, holy shit. 40 since 2017.
40. Like, most, I would assume that most detectives don't hit 40 in a lifetime career.
Wow. I mean, right? That's either, I'm sure it's a combination of her being a complete badass and the police force doing nothing.
Right. Yes. Authorities don't have an official count of the numbers of the cases she's assisted on, but do confirm it is a significant number.
That's so amazing.
I know! 40 fucking killers.
Yeah, I really thought you were going to say, like, since 1987 or something.
No, 4 years.
Oh my God.
Frida saw the police surrounding Garcia's house the night Jesse's body was found, and so wandered over to investigate and subsequently started following the case. 2 days later, two additional bodies were found in the backyard of Garcia's home. Mm-hmm. 25-year-old Martha Patricia Nava Sotelo, who had been missing since February 2019, and 27-year-old Adriana Gonzalez Hernandez, who had been missing since March 2017, and the media started referring to Garcia as, quote, the monster of Toluca. Ugh. When the drug war started in Mexico 15 years ago, crime began to steadily rise and police forces can't begin to keep up with the enormous caseloads, and so many violent crimes and murders of women are generally given a lower priority, leading to unnecessary suffering of the families and dangerous killers left on the street. Quote, the journalist Lydiette Carrion, who'd spent more than 6 years investigating how Mexico State handles femicide investigations, found that cases are often kicked from one agent to another like hacky sacks, and that mothers are sometimes shown victims' bones and asked if they can identify their daughters.
No, they aren't.
Yes, they are.
Wow.
And let's not forget about corruption and misogyny.
Mm-hmm.
Local officials often skim federal funding allocated for police training and reinforcement, and the popular police response to missing women is that they've run off with their fucking boyfriends.
Ugh, God.
Police often ask families to wait 72 hours. 72 hours! Like, everybody knows that is then you are done. Yeah. The case is done. Yes. Anything that is done is fucking done.
Yeah.
Before filing a report, despite a federal mandate to open investigations immediately. Quote, what we see from investigators is bad performance from the very start, says Nancy Lopez, director of the Mexican Commission for the Defense and Promotion of Human Rights. To make matters worse, it's very hard to prosecute the killers who are captured. Quote, when you have a homicide, the only thing police need to prove is A murdered B. But when you have a femicide, they need to prove that A murdered B because of C, says Anna Pakova, director of the women's rights organization, Equus.
Wow.
So I think her point being because they're just killing women because they hate women.
Right.
Right. And so there's not a motive.
Right.
You know, there's not a proper motive. It's not, oh, well, because she cheated or whatever. Right. Just simply because they're women. Wow. They're being killed. Yeah. Quote, a recent investigation by the NGO Mexicans Against Corruption found that out of 15,000 violent deaths of women between 2012 and 2018, only 3,056 were investigated as femicide cases, even though they identified an additional 2,700 as fitting the criteria.
Wow.
And out of those, only 739 men were ultimately sentenced.
Oh my God.
739 out of 15 fucking thousand.
Oh. It's quick. Do the math. What's the percentage?
Staggeringly low. Not much. Yeah. 0.00. Yeah. So when Marta Leticia Gonzalez reported her 26-year-old daughter, Ayosela, missing in 2019, she was passed from investigator to investigator, and none of them showed signs of actually searching for her daughter. Finally, her daughter's head was located, and she, quote, was sent a piece of her skin and her hair to bury.
Stop it.
She spent the next few months requesting the rest of her daughter's skull, which they eventually sent so she could give her daughter a proper burial.
I mean...
I know.
So, I don't know.
I know. It's fucking devastating. It's, like, so unnecessary and so fucking devastating. Yeah,
that's what it's the unnecessary part. Like, I get being overwhelmed. Yep. And having no resources or, you know, I get it. Whatever. Yep. But then there's just blatant disregard for human life.
Yeah,
on all, to the like, point. Not just the victims' lives, but the families' lives. And,
yes.
You know, your child, I can't imagine. You receive their skin and hair. Oh, God.
No.
No.
I know. It's fucking cruel and very strange and very fucking unnecessary. Yes. Her daughter's case has since gone cold. Mm-hmm. Quote, I felt so powerless, she said. I could see the authorities weren't doing anything. I could see they don't look for women. To try to flush out Garcia, Frida created a blog post about him and his crimes and referred to him as a, quote, attention-starved Mr. Nobody and asked for help with tips from people who might have information on his whereabouts.
I love her.
I love her. She also took to social media and wrote, quote, Oscar Garcia Guzman is an idiot who thinks he's so great. I'm waiting for you here.
I love how it's not over the top either. Like, the insults, right? It's just like the truth. She's just speaking the truth. Matter of fact. Not building him up to be some sort of monster. He's just a fucking idiot.
Yeah, you're just an attention-starved fucking baby man. Come God. On, come. I'm waiting.
I'm waiting. I'm here. Here I am. You're going to regret the day you were born.
Roundhouse kicks are coming your way in spades, you fucking dick. On the blog post, she included a close-up photo of his face. She remembers thinking, quote, he's going to get mad. He's going to look for me.
Yep.
And he did.
Yeah, he did.
A week later, and God, 3 weeks brave. After, I can't imagine. I cannot imagine. No. A week later, and 3 weeks after Jesse Jaramillo's body was found, Frida received a message from a Facebook account with the name Alexander Anderson, who claimed to know when Garcia's three victims had been murdered, where the bodies had been hidden, and knew details about the interior of the home. The person also mentioned a black notebook that contained five names and corresponding dates, which he claimed were the five people he'd killed and when he'd killed them, but Jesse was not on that list. Quote, I ran out of time and I couldn't put down Jessica. How do I know this? I'm Oscar. The message read, and then in all caps, do I have your attention now?
Oh, God.
Yeah, fucking slow jerk.
Yeah, like, no, you don't.
No, you
boring me. God.
Ooh, well, scandalous. I didn't see that coming. Yeah, Dick. I know that you murdered a bunch of fucking people because they found some terrible. Of them in your backyard.
Yes.
Grow up. Frieda immediately shared the message with the police commander, who confirmed that the details shared in the message were accurate, and Frieda began messaging with Alexander Anderson, a.k.a. Garcia. Garcia said he was worried about his pets, his cat Paz, and his dogs Gronda, Petra, and Demona, and said if Frieda could confirm their safety with photos, he would give her information about his murders in return. The communication was crucial to potentially bringing Garcia to justice, but one small issue was that Gronda, Garcia's favorite dog, had been shot to death on the night police searched his home.
Uh-oh.
Frieda and the police agreed that she would need to stall to keep him talking for as long as possible while they attempted to triangulate his location through his phone or computer. For the next 3 weeks, Frieda barely ate or slept so she could be constantly available when Garcia contacted her, and he did almost daily. Quote, he was by turns joking and arrogant, lauding his, quote, superior intelligence and the police's ineptitude, then furious and impatient for news of his pets. He often launched into tirades about how much he hated his mother.
Ugh,
no surprise there.
Yeah.
Quote, there were times I wanted to scream at him, Frieda said. I would speak to him harshly and tell him, quote, you sound like an idiot. Why don't you behave like what you are? You're a man. You're a killer. So behave like one. But she kept her cool and played into his ego, and then would switch to scolding him in her own all caps messages like a disappointed mother, which is so fucking smart.
So smart.
Oh, you hate your mother? Well,
you.
Here comes your mother. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Eventually, he began bragging about his prowess with women, calling them stupid for falling for him, and asked Frieda if she was in love with him yet. She asked Frieda, quote, why did you defend those whores? You should defend animals. They are loyal.
Oh, God.
He said he'd always had ambitions of being a serial killer, and that his first victim was his father, who he killed when he was 16.
Wow.
I know. He also mentioned killing two people named Monica and Tomas, but wouldn't give any last names or any other details. Frieda worked hard to track down Garcia's pets and found his cat first. She was literally in the process of filming the cat to send to Garcia when her phone started blowing up with messages from him. Someone from the prosecutor's office had sent him a photo of his pets in cages on the night his house was raided, and he was so furious he threatened to kill another woman for revenge.
Because they were in cages?
Yes. Quote, he said he'd already chosen his next victim. Frieda tried to calm him down. She told him that she was with Paz at that very moment and begged him not to do anything rash. She sent the video of the cat, but he didn't see it. He had already logged off.
Ugh, no.
He also posted on Facebook that he would, quote, continue killing women for the mistreatment my pets suffered from the authorities. He added that it was the authorities, quote, mistakes that had allowed him to get away with 6 murders already, quote, and that's why I love Mexico, he wrote.
Oh, God.
Gross. Frieda didn't hear from him for 2 days, and when he reached out again, it was to inform her that he had killed the woman and to thank her for the video of his cat.
Ugh.
Frieda continued to pry for information about Monica and Tomas, but Garcia wouldn't budge without more confirmation that his pets were okay, especially his favorite dog, Gronda. Frieda stalled by sending photos of the other pets and claiming that Gronda was so upset without him that she refused to eat and was so sick she couldn't be photographed. Whether or not he believed Frida's stories about Gronda, he clearly began to trust her because he reached out to her to propose a deal. He said if she would agree to adopt and care for all of his animals, he would turn himself in.
What?
Like,
wow.
Everybody's got their fucking kryptonites, but wow, guy.
Just well, like, that's that. Yeah, I've been thinking that the whole time. Like, that. What's like the psychology behind the like putting these animals on such a pedestal and
yeah.
Like women's lives, they are nothing. Like,
right.
The extreme in that.
Well, it's got to be like a super self-centered, yeah. Like very narcissistic yeah. Thing. Like he loves his animals because animals love unconditionally.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
And so they're the only things that won't hurt him.
Right.
And so he's just built this fucking weird pathology
yeah.
That the animals mean more even than his life. Right. And, like, basically no human life matters, only animal lives matter, which is kind of a good argument.
Yeah, I mean, I'm good with that.
But we don't do that, guy. No. You know, get your shit together, make a friend. Like, join a fucking book club or something.
Or just, like, go join PETA and leave the women right. alone. Like, go fight such for a good animal idea. Rights.
Yeah. Seriously, such a good idea. When she agreed to the deal, he also promised to reveal the details of Monica and Tomas's murders, which he did through a Word doc that he sent on December 2nd. In the Word doc, he outlined that Monica Chavez had been one of his classmates, and he killed her because she ignored him. The night he broke into the home to murder her, he ran into her father, Tomas, first, so stabbed him to death. Monica returned home a little later, and he kidnapped and brought her to his house, where he kept her for 17 days before he finally killed her and left her body in a fucking ditch. On December 5th, 2019, 38 days after he'd fled from his home, Garcia reached out to Frida one last time to ask if she'd received his email, but she was offline. By the time she logged back in, he was in custody. Authorities had somehow been able to pinpoint his exact location and arrested him while he was eating a sandwich in Mexico City.
Yes.
Quote, Frida regrets not having been there. Quote, I wanted to see his face and tell him, your dog's dead, she told the reporter. And for the first time since they'd started speaking, she laughed.
Yes.
Frida reached out to the families of Garcia's other victims, Martha Patricia Nava Sotelo, Adriana Gonzalez Hernandez, and Monica Chavez, and they all shared stories similar to Jesse's family. When Martha Patricia had gone missing, her brother Giovanni had traced her phone to Garcia's home, just like Jesse's had. But police refused to search then, too.
Oh my God.
Her brother, who was a father of two, put so much time and effort into finding her, he eventually lost his job. Quote, if they'd listened to me, Giovanni told reporters, Oscar would be in prison and Jessica Jaramillo's life would have been saved.
That's awful.
It's fucking devastating. The author of the article I read was able to confirm that Garcia was a suspect in Adriana Gonzalez Hernandez and Martha Patricia Nava Sotelo's disappearances when Jessica Jaramillo went missing.
Stop.
But still, police did nothing. They knew he was a bad guy. They knew it twice.
No, I'm speechless. Knock,
knock, knock. No, can't do anything. Yes.
I just don't care.
They cannot be bothered.
Oh, my God.
Garcia has yet to see his day in court, and no one has been able to confirm if he actually killed a woman to seek revenge for the treatment of his pets. So Frida Guerrera grew up in a very different Mexico, one where she generally felt safe, and she was transformed by reading about the escalating crimes against women in Juarez in the early 2000s, and also found herself in a very abusive relationship around the same time. After 7 years, she left the relationship and dedicated herself to telling the stories of women and girls who suffered and died at the hands of men. Quote, Guerrera's work was lonely and dangerous. Death threats were routine, and she isolated herself from friends and family to protect them. One time she opened her front door to find the crushed corpse of one of her cats lying in front of her. Then one day she was grabbed off the street, blindfolded, hustled into a van, beaten, and told to leave Oaxaca.
Oh my God.
This happened on 3 occasions.
Oh my God.
Like,
wow.
Yeah. Yes. One little kitty cat ends up dead on my fucking steps. I'm done with that career. I am going to work at Chipotle after that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not brave enough to just do it in the first place. You know?
No.
Wow.
Sadie and I, like, break into cold sweats when somebody posts something, like, slightly accusatory on our social media.
Totally. No. If there's, like, an active, like, a case we cover that the accused killer isn't behind bars and still alive, we right. put it behind a paywall.
Exactly.
We are babies.
Chicken shits. Wow. Yes. Yes. Everyone take note. Frida Guerrera. is insane in the best possible fucking way. She changed her name to protect her identity and chose Frida after Frida Kahlo and Guerrera after someone referred to her as a warrior.
Wow.
In 2016, the hashtag #MyFirstAssault gained popularity in Mexico and, quote, gave voice to an increasingly vocal women's movement. Quote, this feminist movement allowed women to insist that gender issues be part of the public agenda, says journalist Valeria Duran. We were able to fight our editors. Whereas stories about murdered women had, until then, been relegated to the, quote, Nota Roja, a lurid crime beat rife with victim blaming and gratuitous violence, they've pushed for more sensitive coverage that focused on the systematic reasons behind the killings.
Yes.
There's also just a general, like, massive feminist uprising in Mexico. I couldn't work into the story quite, you know, seamlessly, but a group of women, like, took over one of the major buildings and turned it into a place for women, like a women's center, and are like still there. Yeah. Good. Still. I mean, as of like the publishing of this article, which I think was published last year, but yeah, they fucking marched down there, took it over, and were like,
fuck you.
Thank you very much. This is where we will take care of women from now on.
Wow. That's amazing.
As one of the female journalists fueling the feminist movement, Frida decided to take her own involvement a step further by working to actually solve the crimes. In 2017, a 4-year-old girl was found dead and naked of any clothes except for a t-shirt and a pair of red socks, which were photographed and used with the articles about her murder. The press named her Little Red Socks, and Frida was appalled that the girl was unidentified and that they'd given her a, quote, fairy tale name.
Ugh.
Yeah. She's not a fucking princess fairy person. She's a murdered toddler with no clothes on. Yeah. She started to rally her supporters to help her get more information about the girl, and 3 months later, someone emailed her a photo of the girl's face, post-mortem, basically.
Wow.
And Frida was like, I can't post this, you know, obviously. So she had a sketch made and circulated, which led to tons of additional coverage of the case. And eventually she received a call from the little girl's aunt, who identified her as Guadalupe Medina Picardo, a.k.a. Lupita. Mm-hmm. A few weeks later, a man called Frida and said he'd been Lupita's neighbor and had tried to rescue her as he'd witnessed horrible abuse at the hands of her mother and her mother's boyfriend.
Motherfucker.
Mm-hmm. Frida brought all of the evidence she'd compiled to the police, and the couple was arrested and sentenced to 88 years in prison.
Man.
Right?
The police are like, yeah, fine, we'll convict him if you bring us everything we need.
Oh,
my God.
Frida has openly criticized the Mexican president in a press conference for not doing anything to address the femicide epidemic in their country. And she lives on a meager stipend that the government pays to journalists who, quote, face considerable danger.
Wow.
I know. She receives as much criticism as she does praise and continues to tweet and catalog the thousands of women and girls who are missing and murdered in her country every day.
Oh my God. We need to, like, support her right now. Seriously. GoFundMe right now.
Well, I'll just give her a Patreon.
Yes.
From here on out.
Seriously.
Right? Yeah. Yes. For real.
For real.
For real. For real.
Oh my God. No, but can we please figure out how to give her money?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
Okay, good. Yes.
Quote, quote, they've called me crazy. She wrote, friends, partners, exes, strangers. It's their absurd way of discrediting the truth. We're crazy because we don't shut up, and it's easier to call us unhinged.
Yes. Oh my God, I've just like, she is my soulmate.
I know. That's the story, you guys.
Oh, what a God.
I mean, it's an endless fucking story. I had to stop somewhere, but that is the story of the fucking, I don't even know what to call her.
Oh, man.
The actual living superhero, Frida Guerrera. And the devastation of the fucking femicide in Mexico and Latin America.
Oh, man. I mean, I needed that story today, Court.
I mean, when I said in the beginning, we're always like, God, I wish that these stories were happier.
Yeah.
Well, this one
is not happy, but it's like,
no, it's so sad, but it's also like, fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. Yes. Somebody's doing something amazing.
Yes. Well, when you don't give any fucks,
yeah,
you know, she just doesn't, whatever. Yeah. Okay. Three times kidnapped. I mean, it's amazing she hasn't been murdered.
It really is.
Yes.
And that she lives off this little stipend. I mean, this is literally all she does. She just stalks the men who murder women and girls.
But really, I really, really want to find out. Like, we've been just sitting, putting our money aside that we get every month.
Yep.
Like, we got to figure out how to give her a big chunk of it.
I don't know. I'll do a little bit more research.
Maybe
but
we could even, like, just reach out to her.
Probably just message her. Yeah.
Be like, you are a hero.
Can we send you... Sadie will send you 200 pesos. You've all heard that story, right?
Yeah.
Did we tell it on here or Patreon?
I don't know.
If you're new and you haven't heard it, basically Sadie got to the airport in Mexico City before the rest of us girls did for a girls' trip and bravely went to the ATM to take out some money for the trip. Took out 200 pesos.
that'll cover it. I had no idea.
And I think we realized that you probably lost money on the transaction with, like,
the
fees that you got on both ends. You probably just gave the ATM $3.
Yep, and then went to the restaurant to wait and looked at the menu and was like, oh, no, I've made a huge mistake.
Horrible mistake.
Like, I knew it wasn't, you know, pesos to dollar equal.
Right.
But I don't know. God.
At least like 50 bucks. No, like $10, $9 anyway.
Yeah. I'm going, walking around Mexico City, being amazed at the police force presence. Like, they were everywhere.
I just
didn't really think that that's how this would go. I mean, I'm just a naive white girl. First time in Mexico City. And then we learned that, what's his
Chapo
face?
Jr. Yeah. Baby Chapo.
Yeah, he had just had a huge fight with them, right? Like a
fucking, yeah, it's like a proper gun down standoff in, like, you know,
like the day
couple
we
neighborhoods
got there.
Over from yeah. where we were staying. Ooh, whoopsie-daisy. Oh.
Yeah. Okay, ha 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 ha. We're just flitting around like, Mexico's crazy. We love
ooh,
it.
Look at textiles. Wow, you can't get this in the United States. This would be $8 in the U.S., you guys.
So
that is an actual idiots. Quote yeah. about coffee.
Yeah, right. Ugh, God, I hate us right now.
I fucking love Mexico City, though.
Oh, man,
I love the country.
Loved it. Yes.
I think Mexico is my favorite.
Yep.
It is my fucking favorite. And Mexico City is a remarkable place.
Yes.
But,
like,
you
to go and learn the language and the currency exchange.
Then team up with Frida and fucking track down women killers.
Yep. Yeah, it's not to make this about me, but we're going to just transition it to me.
Go
right
for
now.
It.
A running theme lately for me has been bravery, courage, feeling capable.
Yep.
And
samesies, by the way.
Yeah.
Big time. Yeah.
So that's why this story feels so perfect, like perfect timing right now.
Yep.
Because I know that I am brave and I know that I'm capable, but I've, especially through like postpartum depression and my pretty severe anxiety, motherhood, moving, I've just really lost myself.
Yep.
And God, it's been a while since I've cried on the podcast, but
you let it out, baby. Let it out.
I know. I have lost myself in a lot of ways. And so had my first experience with EMDR therapy. I've been
get
seeing
it,
my
everybody.
Therapy. Yeah,
get
my therapist
it.
For a year now, and we had our first in-person visit in a year.
So crazy.
And I've just been really struggling with having the courage to like have hard conversations and do things that are best for me, but that are going to be hard boundaries for other people. You know, things like that.
Oh, it's absolute fucking. It's like physical torture for people like us to
big
say
time.
No.
Big time.
Yeah, it feels
especially
like
for people that we really love and care about.
Yep.
And so my therapist was like, "Let's do some EMDR," which I've been nervous about, and I believe in it for everybody else, and I've heard such great things about. But I was I felt a little vulnerable, and I didn't know what to expect. And so we worked on that and about how to be brave And it was very simple. So if anybody's out there that has thought about it, you've had trauma in your past or whatever, I think everybody benefits from EMDR. But
yes,
if it's something that you've thought about and you're hesitant, this is your message right now to go try it, because it was fucking incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple. It took about 20 minutes and she would run, I'm hitting my microphone. She would just run through some scenarios, like where I felt really brave, and talk about where I was feeling that in my body. And then we would run through the scenario that I was trying to resolve, the conversation that I wanted to have. And we would run through that, and I would have to like call up that feeling inside my body.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that until I felt calm and ready. Like I could actually just walk out of there and go have the conversation, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it has been completely, it has just shifted,
mm-hmm.
especially my anxiety. It has like shut that off, and I am seeing the world in a different way, especially like relationships with people. I just don't care in a good way. Like I, you know, like,
yes.
Anyway, I could talk about it forever, but it has really, created this peace inside of me,
mm-hmm.
where I still deeply care and love the people around me, but I'm not taking on their stuff like I would tend to normally.
Yeah. Yeah. You really have to, it's about being like, I don't fucking care, mm-hmm. in the most loving possible way.
Like, of course, if they need it, you know, like if it was legitimate, I still have access to that part of my empathy.
Right.
But I'm not taking on their bullshit, and I'm not going to be afraid of holding boundaries firm for myself. So
It's the best. And I think, you know, everybody backslides. I've definitely come to a similar place in my life in the last, I'm like, I don't know, 6 months, 3 weeks, I don't know, not very long ago.
Right.
Very recently have started caring much, much less. Mm-hmm. And I do still slide back into the anxiety and the caring sometimes. But I'm just like, I don't have control over how you feel about me. And if I'm not actively trying to ruin you, somebody else's life or day or moment, I can't control how they respond to me. Mm-hmm. And it's a very hard thing to let go. And, you know, narcissists and sociopaths are really good at making you think you did something wrong. But other people, you know, it's like, oh, well, maybe so-and-so's mad at me. Well, great. Then they can tell me they're mad at me. And we can have a conversation about it. And then they can forgive me or not forgive me. But it's like, who really wants to be friends / coworkers / whatever with people who can't keep their own shit together enough to be a grown-up and talk to you about how they're feeling?
Right. Well, you know, my my therapist talks to me a lot about, it's the unhealthy people in your life when you set a boundary for yourself that are going to push back.
Yep.
And, you know, it can make everybody a little uncomfortable, but it's only like the really unhealthy ones that are going to really push hard.
Yeah.
You know, and so she'll be like, well, what did your parents think about that? Well, no, they're fine with it. Right. Because they're not narcissists. So they support you because they want you to be happy. And that's normal. And, you know, I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay. And she's like, how do you feel when people put boundaries for you? Like, give you a boundary to, like, I that's fine. Right. Because you're not a narcissist, sort of thing. So it's like,
exactly. Yes. No, that's what I always say too. I'm like, would you react that way? You know, when I have a friend who's like going through a breakup with a narcissist or somebody bordering on narcissism, and like, would you do that? Would you have reacted to you in that situation in the same way? Like, no, absolutely fucking not. Yeah. Well, that's not normal. Right. That's not a healthy way to react. If that's how it feels, like, you don't need to sit, like, run the red fucking string from moment to moment and try to figure it out. You could just walk away from it and be like, that's really extreme reaction to what just went down. And I don't have any responsibility. I can't just set it down and walk away.
Yep.
You know?
So it's not a fix all. Like Courtney was saying, you know, that's the other thing my therapist is constantly reminding me of. We're not climbing the peak of the mountain. We're going to stay. It's hills and valleys. And you know, it comes and goes, but overall there's been a huge shift, and
it's so good.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And the OCD thinking, which you mentioned, and that's my biggest problem with anxiety, is like locking into the conversation and having it in my own head over and over for at least 24 hours. That shit is for no other reason, I will do EMDR to like try to get out of that fucking cyclical pattern in my own brain. And yeah. I have gotten better at it over the years, but that part makes me fucking batty.
Yes.
I'm like, well, I really don't care. I know. I don't care. I'm not like, I don't care about that client or whoever sent me a snippy email or whatever, you know, but I will still think about that email for 24 plus hours. Yeah. And that lay in bed, not cool.
Can't fall asleep, running it through. Yeah,
exactly.
Yep. So anyway,
get out there and do it.
Do
and
it.
Then if you get EMDR, you will probably become a fucking superhero for women's rights.
I'm ready. Seriously.
You know, it's a 90% chance that you will dedicate your life to tracking down and prosecuting the killers of women.
Tell me her name again.
Frida Guerrera.
Yeah, man. Fuck. I'm going to channel her from now on. Like, I need some bravery. Frida, here I come.
Oh, I was just thinking the other day about, there's this great documentary on Shudder, if you're a horror fan. It is 4.5 fucking hours long, and it's all about 80s horror movies. I put it on. I had a really, really, really bad day on Saturday, and I like could not focus on anything. And I put it on and was like, oh my God, this is the salve to this fucking shitty emotional day. Mm-hmm. And it just goes on for so long. And it's so, if you are a horror fan, watch it immediately. But it was making me think about, which wasn't covered in this movie, but they were talking about how female characters in the movies is one of the sections, and like the final girl, and about how, you know, the relationships with the viewer and women in horror are very complicated because they're oftentimes like super objectified, and it's all like, you know, sex and tits and exactly. And but how a lot of the women commenting on the documentary were like, but those girls made me feel really brave. Mm-hmm. You know, they showed me like this picture of somebody who doesn't need to be saved. They can save themselves. And that made me think of Jodie Foster in fucking Silence of the Lambs, taught me how to not be afraid of the dark. And I have like carried that through my entire life. The scene where she's in the basement with Buffalo Bill and he's got the fucking night vision goggles and she can't see shit.
Yes.
Like anytime I'm kind of scared or overwhelmed, I'm just like, just Jodie Foster in the basement.
God, Jodie Foster in the basement. I wish I had that as a 12-year-old. That's brilliant. Yes. Yeah. I'm going to show that my 3-year-old right now. It's really afraid of the dark. I'm going to just show him that clip and be like, be her, kid, be her.
Yeah. Just ignore the skin suit. Ignore
all the other terrible.
The lady in the fucking hole and the moths.
Oh, no. Yeah. Forget.
Never. Cop getting his face eaten off and strung up like a fucking moth.
Too soon?
It's fine.
Too soon. Yeah.
God, no. I think I watched that movie when I was 9, so he's pretty close. I think 3 is the new 9, because kids are growing up so fast these days, so it's totally fine.
I started reading Harry Potter to the oldest. Did I say that? We finished the first book, we watched the movie, and spoiler alert, if you haven't read or watched the first Harry Potter, I'm going to spoil it. There's the end part where, have you seen it? Have you read the books?
Yes, oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Where they unveil the turban with Voldemort's face on the back of the guy's head.
I don't remember, but and, great. Yeah.
Yeah,
I
that's
how you reread the book.
Yeah. And it's really pretty creepy looking.
Right.
And I paused it before. I was like, this is going to be the scary part. And you choose right now if you, like, you know what's going to happen because we just read the book.
Right.
Do you want to see it? Of course he did.
Right.
And so I started it. And I was watching him watch it, and his eyes just, like, got... And so I paused it again, but I paused it on Voldemort's really scary face. I was like, do you want to fast-forward it? And he was like, yeah. So we just skipped ahead. But we're going to finish the second book, and then I think I'm going to wait, because they get darker. I think we'll wait a year and keep going. So
that... it's time. It's time to lose. My pizza's here, you guys. Whoa, it came so much sooner. Hold on one second. Yes. I'll be right back. I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back.
All right, we've got to wrap this up. You got pizza to eat.
Yes! Laura's not home tonight, and she does not like Papa John's. And I really want this trashy ass pizza, so I ordered it. I thought I timed it.
Code 10. They will kill 10 for 10% off. Just kidding. I don't actually do that because I'm just teasing. For your own piece of crappy ass pizza.
Yeah. Does anybody like trashy ass pizza? It's basically fucking just sugar with some cheese on it. Get Papa John's when your wife's not home, but time it better than I did so it doesn't interrupt your podcast. Yes, we have one name. Oh. This week we have one name. Who's Dusty Pat? Toy Large. Okay. Dusty Toy Large.
So how do you come up with a toy middle name? Like, I don't. That's so strange. The
slightest fucking idea. Nope.
Oh man.
Do we have any shout outs?
I am pulling them up.
Oh, one more thing. Gargiulo got the death sentence. The fucking Hollywood Ripper, the story that I did recently. Got the fucking death sentence. Yep.
What state was that in? Oh, Hollywood. California?
It was in Ohio. Hollywood, Ohio.
I didn't think they did death penalty in California.
Oh, but remember he was in Chicago, too. Oh, he killed some people in Chicago. Right. Yep. So, I guess they don't take kindly to serial killers in
Chicago. I mean, California might just have a, what's it called, like a pause. You can still get charged with, or convicted and sentenced to, I don't know. I need to stop talking because I don't know.
No, tell me everything.
Like, maybe you can still get convicted and, I mean, sentenced. God. Sentenced. That's the word. Sentenced to death.
Well, I think he got life in California, okay. And then they bringing him on okay. back to California, to Chicago.
Get it.
To Chicago, where they gave him death.
All right. Are you ready?
Yeah.
For this? These are our patrons that signed up to join us over there. 50 million episodes now. Some good ones. Lots of good ones.
We're really good at ads. Get some crappy ass pizza. Also, come over. Yeah, it's good it's in really there. And it's good.
Thank you so much to Carolina.
Carolina?
Mm-hmm. I'm just looking from the Czech Republic. I think number two.
What the fuck? What? How?
I hope that their best possible? Friends, our other patron, who's also from the Czech Republic. And it's probably not Carolina. It's probably much sexier sounding than that.
Yeah.
So, you tell us.
Well, I gone to Carolina with on my mind. Right?
Yeah.
Just going. I'm going there with it on my mind.
On your mind.
On down in it to it.
Carolina probably
on
doesn't.
On my mind. Know that song, maybe. It's not. It's a combination of like four songs. You're
right. So
I just riffed off of four. So I just can do that. I can just like think of. You just like say a name, and I just like put four songs throw together it in there. For you. Yep.
And we have two today. This week, two. Just two. The second, and I almost said best, but I don't mean that because
Carolina. She didn't mean it.
Thank you so much to Kim Shocktastic.
Oh, come on. Shit.
Yeah, man.
I mean, put him at the top of the fucking podium. There's the bronze, the silver, and the gold. Mm-hmm. And Shocktastic takes the gold, obviously.
Yep. I feel like people are playing with names a little bit more on our Patreon when they sign up.
I love it.
You can give us your real name privately and whatever you put as your like profile name. Is separate, and you can just make us say things that make us uncomfortable. No.
Yep. It'll be kind of like the dick pic email that is up there, but for Patreon.
I haven't checked that in a while.
Supporters. But yeah. You can just harass and abuse us with your names. Or make a name like Shocktastic, which thrills and delights us.
Yes. So thank you, Kim, so much for your support.
Thank you guys so much. And if you want to hang out with us more, find out about things, look at what the fucking Patreon episodes are for various weeks, etc., come on over to Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at They Will Kill. You can go to our website anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because it's on the internet. They will kill.
I'm just picturing somebody like sitting on our boring ass website like for 24 hours a day. Like, oh, it's okay.
Still the same. This thing never closes? Oh, it's still open. Yeah, doesn't really change that much either.
Nope.
Twice a week, I guess it changes slightly. It is theywillkill.com. And you can email us, theywillkillpodcast@gmail.com.
Rate, review, subscribe, please.
Yes. We just got a really, really nice review from the Czech Republic last week. And so I'm going to go ahead and assume it's Carolina.
Yes.
Going on down to it in her mind.
Yep. Thank you, AJ Bergens, for our music.
Thank you so much.
And remember,
be brave. Roundhouse kicks.
Yeah.
Roundhouse kicks. If you feel scared, if you feel anxious, if you're dealing with some fucking narcissistic bullshit,
yeah.
Roundhouse kick it.
And then EMDR therapy it after that.
Yep.
Or before that. Or both. All the time.
Correct. Yep.
Do it.
Do it. And good night and goodbye.
Goodbye.
We love you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.